Welcome to the HSD podcast series. I'm your host today, Laura Franco, Vice President, Director of Post-Acute Regulatory Strategy. Today, I'm joined by Jennifer Lamb, RN, MBA, and Mock Surveyor for Life Care Services. And we're going to be talking about the new FTAG numbering system and the regulations contained in each of the new FTAGs. Our goal is to actually help you understand each FTAG fully now that the state surveyors have implemented them, and we're going to help you stay compliant with those FTAGs. We're going to start off today by talking about FTAG 600, which was the prior FTAG 223, and the title is Freedom from Abuse and Neglect. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks, Laura. I'm happy to be here and ready to get started and share some more information about these new FTAGs and how the communities can get ready for their new state surveys.
Wonderful, wonderful. Why don't you start off by recapping for our listeners what they can actually expect from this series of podcasts that we've been doing?
Absolutely. Well, we have been covering one tag per podcast contained under the 49 tags identified as substandard quality of care. And today, of course, we are continuing that. The substandard quality of care is defined by CMS as having more than one deficiency related to participation requirements under resident behavior and facility practices, quality of care, and quality of life. And these constitute either immediate jeopardy to the resident health and safety, a pattern of or widespread actual harm that is not immediate jeopardy, or a widespread potential for more than minimal harm but less than immediate jeopardy with no actual harm. We'll be using the State Operations Manual, Appendix TP, Guide for Surveyors for Long-Term Care Facilities, that became effective on November 28, 2017. And this is the most recent guide for the SOM, for the new surveyors. This is the exact SOM that the surveyors use, and it's our best tool to learn as much as the surveyors and to get prepared for the state survey. And we recommend that you also download this SOM and follow along as you listen to the podcast so that you can get the best information.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I think, Jennifer, for our listeners today, it's important for them to know that today's podcast starts us on a 10-tag series where we're going to talk about abuse and neglect. So F600 is free from abuse and neglect, and it's considered the most important tag of that 600 series.
Absolutely. It sure is, Laura. The most important thing that we can do is to protect the residents who are entrusted in our care. And in fact, you know, CMS agrees so much so that they took just a handful of tags, four or five tags, and they've expanded it out to 10 tags. So, you know, they mean business as far as, you know, getting us educated and getting us ready where abuse and neglect are concerned. And we should take it as seriously. And that's why we're going to dive in and tackle these 10 tags.
Well, and as I understand, F600 is particularly long with a lot more content added than in the previous SOM. So let's look at that.
Okay. Well, CMS again took, and I guess it was six tags, not five, as I said just a second ago. But anyway, they broke it down into the 10 tags, and some of the areas needed more guidance and clarification. And we're discussing all 10 of these over the next several podcasts. But today, of course, you know, as you said, the focus is going to be on F600.
Okay, let's start with the definition. If you could define F600 for us.
Certainly. F600 says that the resident has the right to be free from abuse, neglect, misappropriation of resident property, and exploitation as defined in the subpart. This includes, but is not limited to, freedom from corporal punishment, involuntary seclusion, and any physical or chemical restraint not required to treat the resident's medical symptoms. The facility must not use verbal, mental, sexual, or physical abuse and corporal punishment of any type by anyone.
And as I understand this, this means that not only does this affect the staff and that they need to adhere to this rule, but so do visitors, families, or anyone who comes into the community from the outside.
Absolutely, yes.
One of the things that was added to this rule was the word willful when it comes to abuse. So willful means the person committing the abuse did so deliberately. It does not necessarily mean that they intended to inflict injury or harm. Is that correct?
That is right, Laura.
Okay, let's talk about willful intent then.
Okay. Well, CMS has expanded on the area of staff-to-resident abuse in the new SOM. It is expected that staff is trained and has knowledge in working with residents who may have behaviors. It is never okay for a staff member to strike a resident in response to combative behavior. Retaliation is abuse, plain and simple. So claiming that you've had a knee-jerk reaction or reflex is not a defense. However, there are instances where an accident may occur, such as a staff member trips and falls and ends up landing on a resident, or accidentally maybe backs into a resident, bumps into them, that the staff member just didn't see. There was no willful intent to deliberately act to harm the resident, so those instances would not be abuse.
So likewise, in the section of the SOM where they speak about resident-to-resident altercations, they take the willful act to consideration as well. The example they use is a resident who has cognitive impairment strikes out and hits another resident that's within reach. And this would be willful, but the resident who strikes another resident due to involuntary movements related to a neurological disease would not have affected or would not have acted willfully.
Yes. And in the second part of that example, F600 would not apply. But it is possible that if the community did not take actions to keep residents safe, they could get cited with a 689 free of accident hazard supervision and devices. But we'll discuss that tag later on in the series.
So what types of things should the staff monitor residents for in order to be compliant with F600?
Well, staff should monitor for behaviors that could potentially cause a reaction from another resident. For instance, verbal, physical, or sexually aggressive behavior, taking another resident's property or rummaging around in their room, wandering in and out of resident rooms. Those are things that can cause a reaction from another resident, which could then in turn become an abusive situation.
Well, there are also facility characteristics that increase the risk of abuse as well. And those could include unsympathetic or negative attitude toward residents, chronic staffing issues, lack of administrative oversight, some staff burnout perhaps, and stressful working conditions, poor or inadequate training and preparation for the caregiving, the actual physical environment, perhaps there are problems there, and facility policies that only take into consideration the interest of the community over the residents.
Yes, and that's true. And I also think that our communities do an excellent job of minimizing the risk in those areas.
I totally agree. So continuing through this really lengthy, important F-tag, tell us some of the signs of abuse so we can understand what those are specifically.
Okay. Well, while most people think of bruises, broken bones, or other outward physical signs as being the obvious signs of abuse, there are some situations where abuse occurs that does not leave an outward sign. Sometimes victims will not speak out against their attacker because they are embarrassed or afraid. Residents who have cognitive impairments or a medical condition that makes it difficult or impossible to communicate can't express what may have happened. Outside of physical signs, abuse can be manifested in fear of a person or a place, like perhaps maybe where the abuse occurred, they don't want to go in that room anymore. They may be afraid to be left alone or afraid of the dark. They may have disturbed sleep or nightmares, and their behavior may be different. They may be more aggressive or withdrawn, and the resident may be crying more often or even talk of suicide.
Let's go through some of the things that constitute abuse. For example, and this is certainly not an exhaustive list, but physical abuse can be slapping, hitting, biting, punching, or kicking. Corporal punishment, which is physical punishment, is used as a means of coercion or correction or control, and it utilizes behaviors, as I just mentioned, as well as hitting with an object. So that could be a combination. Some indications that this has occurred might actually be a suspicious injury that has no explanation. Is that correct? The extent or location of the injury might also be a suspect, and the resident might have fractures or burns or possibly bites or facial injuries. Those are just to name a few.
Right. And, you know, there's some instances where maybe staff says, oh, that resident fell down and the injury is just not consistent with what the story is. And so that, you know, gives people pause to think maybe an investigation needs to occur. Another form of abuse can be the deprivation of goods and services. Goods and services that are necessary for the resident to maintain physical, mental, and psychosocial well-being should not be withheld from the resident. If the staff does withhold or denies resident requests, that's also considered abuse.
So mental and verbal abuse is another area of abuse that's closely looked at due to the psychosocial harm that can occur. And when it happens, as we've discussed in previous podcasts, the surveyors can and will double those FTAG penalties. Mental abuse is where verbal and nonverbal ways of bringing about shame, humiliation, degradation, intimidation, or fear to a resident has occurred. So some examples of this might include harassing a resident, actually mocking someone or insulting them, yelling at them, threatening, actually hovering over a resident with the intent to intimidate or isolate a resident from social interactions or activities. And those are all pretty obvious. But another example in wake of a widespread use of terminology is the use of smartphones and other electronics to abuse residents. And an example would be using your phone to take degrading or humiliating pictures and videos of a resident is absolutely never okay. It is a complete violation of the resident's privacy and their dignity. Even if a resident has given consent to be photographed, it really does go without saying that residents have not given any consent to be used in a photograph or social media or consenting to anything abusive in any form.
Absolutely. Social abuse is one of the most heinous and damaging forms of abuse. It is the non-consensual sexual contact between a resident and anyone who violates this, whether it be a visitor, staff member, another resident, or even the spouse of the resident. Sexual abuse is not limited to, but does include the unwanted touching of genitals or any assault or battery, including rape, sodomy, or coerced nudity. Forced observation of pornography or any sexual acts, those are sexual abuse. And of course, the taking of photos of residents in any kind of sexually compromising situation, that's also abuse. So some of the signs of sexual abuse might be some bruising around the genitals, inner thighs and the breasts, unexplained STDs or infections, vaginal bleeding or torn, stained garments. Those can be some signs of that sexual abuse has occurred.
Jen, it should also be noted that sexual contact is considered non-consensual when a resident is cognitively impaired and they can't truly give consent, even if the resident appears to want that contact to occur, as well as if they don't want the contact to occur. Other times when non-consent occurs is in the resident that might be sedated or temporarily unconscious.
Yes. And also, if heaven forbid an investigation of alleged abuse does occur, one of the first things to determine is whether or not the sexual activity was consensual or not. Residents continue to have healthy, normal adult relationships that include sexual activity, so it is vital to determine before alleging abuse if there was consent or not. The SOM does go into much more detail about consent under F-600. So if you're curious or need to know more information on this subject, the SOM absolutely has a lot more information that you can glean from F-600.
Well, and the SOM also speaks to that non-sexual touch. So for example, holding a resident's hand or offering a hug. It's acceptable, and the community does not have to have a no-touch policy between the staff and the residents as long as the non-sexual touch is consistent with the resident's preferences. So not all physical contact is considered abuse. So that's really important to make that distinction.
I agree with you, Laura. It's absolutely true. Now, if there is an allegation of sexual abuse or non-consensual sexual activity, the community must immediately conduct a thorough investigation. They can't wait. There must be no delay. The first steps in the event of alleged sexual abuse are immediately implement safeguards to protect the resident and prevent any further abuse. That is the number one thing, is to protect the resident. Immediately report the allegation to the appropriate authorities. Conduct a thorough investigation of the allegation and thoroughly document and report the result of the investigation of that allegation.
And what we do know is that CMS added to the SOM that they are not requiring facilities to adopt a specific approach in determining the resident's capacity consent. What they do suggest is that the facility establish an ethics committee that includes legal consultation in order to assist in the development and implementation of policies related to resident quality of life, resident quality of care, advanced directives, and intimacy and relationships.
Yes. And since medical conditions can alter a person's cognitive ability and the capacity to give consent, the facility should monitor and reevaluate the resident's capacity to give consent as the situation progresses. There are also residents who have designated or legally appointed representatives. And the SOM covers this particular area in great detail as well under F-600.
And the SOM covers the different allegations of sexual abuse between staff and residents, resident to resident, and visitor to resident, including the spouse or partner. So regardless of who the perpetrator might be, the number one responsibility we have is to protect our residents.
Yes. And now that we have talked a bit about abuse, let's talk about neglect. According to the SOM, neglect is where the facility has identified goods and services that the resident needs and can provide, but then turns and withholds those from the resident. Neglect may be the result of a pattern of failures or may be the result of just one or more failures involving one resident and one staff person.
Well, and also according to the SOM, neglect can occur when staff is aware or should be aware of a resident's needs, but they're unable to meet the identified needs due to circumstances such as lack of training, lack of sufficient staff, lack of supplies, or lack of the staff's knowledge of the resident's need. So the SOM actually provides several examples of this this situation under F-600.
When a resident is admitted to the health center, the staff there is saying that they have the capacity to meet the resident's needs and that they are able to do so. For examples of each severity level of F-600, you can also refer to the SOM as well. Those will give you some excellent examples.
So let's talk about what our health centers can do to prevent getting a citation or receiving a citation on F-600.
Honestly, the short answer is to protect our residents. We need to do everything we can to make sure that the people that we put in the position to take care of our residents have passed every screening, and also empower staff and residents to report anything they see, hear, or suspect immediately. Now, in the past, when I was a state surveyor, I had the unfortunate experience to investigate abuse allegations that were actually substantiated. The cases that I investigated back then were actually brought to light by staff members who were alert and confident in reporting what they had heard and seen to their DON and administrators. And thank God that they did, because that was something that was vital. When a resident or a staff member comes to someone they trust and reports that abuse, it's imperative that the resident that has been the victim is made safe immediately and that action is taken immediately to start that investigation. There may be physical evidence where time is of the essence.
Well, this has been a really important topic for us to discuss today, and I would like to thank all of our listeners for joining us today on this series and our continuing series of outlining the new F-tags and on the series of F-600 series that we're doing, Freedom from Abuse and Neglect, and we hope that you found this beneficial. And I'd also like to thank you, Jennifer, for your work, and looking forward to our next discussion in the F-600 series.
Thank you, Laura. I'm absolutely looking forward to our next podcast as well. Next time, we're going to talk about F-602, which is free from misappropriation and exploitation.
And again, thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Legal disclaimer. LifeCare Services, LLC is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.